Elohim is used to describe demons, angels, the dead Samuel, spirit come back from the dead.
We don't really know what these beings are, but they are manifested as humans, right? They eat with Abraham.
No. I'm going to correct you on that one. Because everybody, I believe, in my opinion, everybody makes this mistake.
But she kept insisting that it was so, and they kept saying, it is his angel. So there was some kind of theology in the early church about angel representation, to which I don't know because the Bible doesn't say. Welcome to Kingdoms Unveiled, where you have two Reformed Baptist pastors who are trying to explain the hard parts of the Bible. We're pulling back the veil, the parts that are often hidden, where Christ says, seek first the kingdom of God, and Paul warns us that we're not wrestling against flesh and blood, but against a principality and all kinds of spiritual warfare that are happening. So that's what this podcast is about. Your host is Doug Van Dorn. He is the pastor of the Reformed Baptist Church in Northern Colorado. He's been there for over 20 years. I'm John Moffitt. I'm the pastor of Grace Reformed Church in Spring Hill, Tennessee. And this is what we're on. I'm trying to think. It's like our 20-something episode, almost 30 episodes together now. So this is good. It's been fun.
Yeah, it is fun. I love it.
So we're kind of just slowly working through helping people understand, just like the kingdom, the podcast says, Kingdoms Unveiled, where we're trying to explain the physical kingdom and the spiritual kingdom and how the two of them work together for God's glory and our good. This is not just for fun. There's a lot of podcasts out there. If you want paranormal podcasts where they talk about ghosts, you can go find those. But we wanted to help people increase their faith in Christ and see the glory for who he is. And the Bible says that all of scripture is profitable for that. And so today we're going to be talking about the parts of our Bible that is often ignored because, well, we fell into rationalism and we fell into all kinds of metaphysical instead of spiritual. So we're going to start covering some basic topics, but I don't think they're basic. I think there's a lot to them. I think it's fun because it helps us see how the Bible interacts with the world. So Doug, today we're going to be covering a series on angels and demons, and it's going to be fun. And I'm going to go ahead and let you talk about kind of the etymology of the word, but before we do, it is interesting at times. I love just asking people their thoughts about angels. And the one thing we're always concerned with whenever I talk to a conservative Reformed or conservative Christian is that we don't pay too much close attention to them because we don't want to fall into angel worship. But I don't know if I've ever met anybody that's done angel worship. Have you?
Nah, I don't think so.
I know it's a problem. Paul talks about it. It can happen. But it's almost as if we don't want to pay attention to the characters in the story because we're afraid that they might become the main character, which I understand the sentiment, but I think they're in there. They're in there for a reason, and they're important to the story. So let's talk a little bit about the word and how it's developed, and then we're going to kind of unpack the characters behind this word. So we'll throw it over to you.
All right. So, I mean, I'm of the opinion that many Christians have this very small view of what's on the other side, that it's kind of like there's angels and demons and that's pretty much it.
And a few,
maybe
of them.
Satan, but, yeah. But he's probably one of them.
Exactly. So,
like that's it.
Yep.
Seraphim, cherubim, everything's just lumped into one group. The four living creatures, mm-hmm. You know, whatever it is you're talking about, it's all just kind of one group or two groups. And so, there's a reason I think why that happens in our minds. We'll get to that here in a moment. But first, I just want to say that I think that the Bible's very clear that there is a host of heaven, the heavenly host. I mean, how many times does that appear in both Testaments? So if there's a host of heaven, then that means there's a whole bunch of different kinds of entities that are over there. And the Bible isn't necessarily even talking about all of them, but it talks about the main ones that interact with us over here on our side, especially that have to do with human beings and whatever it is that, however, why ever they interact with us, which I suppose we can get into talking about a little bit later. Mm-hmm. So for this show, we're going to talk about angels. Next one, talk about demons. But angel is a English word that translates a Hebrew word malak, or malek. Malak. Malek is the king, mm-hmm. but malak. And then it translates a Greek word, angelos, And both of those words, the Hebrew and the Greek, both just simply mean a messenger. That's all that they mean.
Right.
Messenger.
Right.
So originally, the word then, therefore, was a functional term. It described what some creature on the other side did when they interacted with us. They came over here to give us a message. So, you know, get out of Sodom and Gomorrah, the angels, that was their message that they came to give. Or,
right.
Or Gabriel, you know, coming to Zechariah, you're going to, and Mary, you're going to have a son. Like, that's what he did. That was his function. It doesn't necessarily tell you what kind of a creature that he was. Now, over time, and especially you see this in the intertestamental literature, and then by the time you get to the New Testament, the word angel, especially in the Greek, became a kind of a catch-all for almost any kind of a being that was on the other side. So you just start talking about them as everything's an angel. Mm-hmm. It started to translate, actually, the word Elohim, which is the Hebrew word that we translate as gods, that we've talked about this word a lot of times. Mm-hmm. So like Psalm 8, God made man a little lower than the Elohim. In Hebrews, that becomes, and the Septuagint, that becomes God made man a little lower than the angels.
That's right.
So angels translating Elohim, whereas we translate that word as gods, even in our Old Testament in Psalm 8, the Septuagint used angel to do that. Mm-hmm. I have a suspicion why I think that was. I think it's because people had as much problem thinking about the gods back then as we do today.
I agree.
And so, If you can somehow use a term that people are more familiar with that isn't G-O-D, then use it, because that will help people to understand that these creatures are not, especially if you're translating this as a Jewish person, mm-hmm. who's a monotheist, or as a Christian who's definitely a monotheist but a Trinitarian. If you're using the word God, it can become confusing to people. So use the word angel. And all of a sudden, I have found, John, that when you use the word angel instead of God, that it just sort of takes away the initial problem that people have. And it allows them to be able to then talk about what Elohim means without getting so instantly angry about it. So I think that's what's going on when the word becomes more of a catch-all. So it can describe the function of a messenger, but it can also describe a creature that's doing all sorts of different kinds of things.
Yeah. I mean, an illustration could be, imagine if you're from another world and you think that there's humans and then there's animals, but animals, you end up, because people can't comprehend the vastness of it, you just refer to everything as a dog, and everything's a dog. You know, sometimes they're a pet, sometimes they're a mangy, you know, scavenger out in the woods, but everything is a dog. And it's like, well, that's really simplifying something that is extremely, extremely complex. And I think that's to your point, is that we have created one word that kind of houses everything. And it's the wrong word. The proper word, which we've argued for in the past, is Elohim, as you've said. Elohim kind of houses like the general population of the spiritual realm. And now we use angel instead. So in its most,
yeah, we've talked about that a little bit, but it's worth mentioning
sure.
it again, I think,
absolutely.
Since it's in this context, that Elohim, when we translate as either capital G-O-D or lowercase G-O-D-S, gods, our minds go to the entity called God. But as Dr. Heiser, I think, has shown very clearly, Elohim is used to describe demons, angels, the dead Samuel spirit come back from the dead. Mm-hmm. Or at least come up through a seance or whatever. It's used to describe the God of the Bible. It describes all kinds of creatures. And so, in other words, Elohim is also a functional term, or maybe more a cosmographical term, that's describing an entity that's on the other side. So it's just funny to me that we have turned all of these words into ontological terms, but really none of them, we'll see this with demon when we get to that as well, none of them are really, at least originally, ontological at all. They're not really describing what kind of a being it is, more a place or a function or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean, in its proper term, angel is just a messenger, as you've stated. And so to say that every human is a mailman or a mailwoman is is not proper. But there are humans who deliver the mail. So I think working through some of this, we'll have to learn that there are, you know, I don't know if Doug and I want to spend our entire energy trying to convince people to use a different word. We're going to use the word angel just because it's what people are comfortable with. But anyways, did you have anything else as far as the etymology before we talk into the function?
Well, let's also just mention that sometimes angel can be a human.
Thank you.
So yep. People argue about this with, you know, like the angels of the churches of Revelation. Mm-hmm. Is that talking about the pastor of the church because he's somehow a messenger of God to the people? Or is it actually talking about, you know, some sort of a heavenly entity that God has put over a church? I mean, there's disagreements, but the point is that it shows that because the word can still even mean a function in the New Testament, people are arguing, is this a heavenly being or an earthly being? So the context really needs to tell you if you're talking, you know, what kind of a creature it is that you're talking about. I think most of the time, and especially in our translations, when we're translating it as an angel, it is a heavenly being, because otherwise, well, you know, the translators can translate it as a messenger or something like that to keep us from being confused. Mm-hmm.
Agree. So helpful. Let's talk a little bit about as you're reading your Bibles, as we're thinking through the story of your pastor, as you're preaching, you're going to start interacting with the spiritual realm as it now comes and influences the physical realm. So a good example of this, and I have a fun one that I'm going to throw at you. I kept it back just because I wanted to get your response live.
My surprise.
Response live. I don't think you're going to be surprised by it, but it'll be fun. But this is from a class that I taught recently, and I'm fascinated with thinking about my king and his kingdom and how he utilizes his creation in the spiritual realm to govern, interact, and advance his kingdom here in the physical realm. I'm just fascinated by it. And I think it's healthy to always be thinking in a two kingdom minded, where I live in a physical kingdom, but I am loyal and living for a spiritual kingdom. And I think that's what the Bible wants us to do. That when we look at what's going on in the Olympics, we understand there's a duality here. There's two things happening.
There's more going on than just the physical. That's for sure.
That's right. We're thinking about what's going on in politics and assassinations and all of this kind of stuff. It's healthy. And it, you know, you could say, well, now, John, you sound like a conspiracy theorist. I was like, no, I'm just reading my Bible and taking it for what it is. And I think it's very clear that there's two forces at play. And we can look at this. So that's where we're going to do a little bit of an introduction, where we're going to look at how Christ, how God has sent his messengers, his workers, to go do things. And they have played into the role of influencing humanity. All right. So just a couple of examples of this. You've got the two angels that visited Lot. Now, that's a fascinating story. They see them as men. So this is a good example of, we don't really know what these beings are, but they are manifested as humans, right? They eat with Abraham.
No. I'm going to correct you on that one. Because everybody, I believe, in my opinion, everybody makes this mistake. Mike Heiser made this mistake.
This is good. Here we go.
They're not appearing as humans. They're appearing as men. And that's a different thing.
Interesting.
Because in the Hebrew, there are two main words. This is a third word.
Okay.
The two main words that are translated for men are Adam and Ish.
Okay.
So Adam, of course, that you can hear where that comes from. That's where we get the word Adam. The only beings that are that are ever Adam are humans.
Okay.
Ish, however, is a word that is used, and we also translate this into English as men, but it's used of humans and angels.
Interesting.
So the men in Sodom and Gomorrah are Ish. They are not Adam. And so they're men, but they're not necessarily human. You see what I'm saying? Now, the reason why I think that this is important is because I am not convinced that angels always appear like men. So, you know, you do get the Hebrews verse that says that you've entertained angels unawares or whatever. And so maybe in that case that they look so much like us that that you can't distinguish them. But like if you look at the Sodom and Gomorrah story and Abraham's by his tent, And in chapter 18, because it's mm-hmm. chapter 19 is the Sodom and Gomorrah, but they come into being in chapter 18. It's like as soon as he sees them, he goes, uh-oh, they're here. Well, how could he know that if they just look exactly like us? So when you get into the literature and the way that they describe these particular kinds of men, which are watchers, and well, they're described as tall and humanish and not humanish. Like there's something off about them. It's kind of like when you get into the ufology and you hear people talk about the Nordics or the lizard people or whatever. It's like they're kind of human, but they're kind of not. And I think that that's a similar thing that's going on. And I think it's just important to say that and very important for this reason, because the angel of the Lord, there's your angel,
exactly,
is Christ in the Old Testament. However, he is not a human in the Old Testament, nor is he appearing as a human. He's appearing as an ish. He's appearing as a man, as an angel. Mm-hmm. And that's a totally different thing, because if you suddenly say that angels are humans or appear as humans, I think that that becomes an attack on the incarnation. And I very much want to say, no, what happens in the incarnation is completely unique. This is where God, for the first time and only time in history, becomes an Adam. He becomes a human being. And that's our redemption right there. So that's the reason why I get so passionate about this. And I think it's an important distinction to make. Those guys in Sodom and Gomorrah are called both angels and men, but they're called Ish, not Adam.
This is the whole point of the podcast. This is why I love it, because I love saying things, and I'm always I'm like, all right, how's Doug gonna handle this one? Here we go.
You weren't even expecting that one.
I wasn't, but we had talked about it a while back and we just didn't think about it when we were started talking about the notes. This is important though, and it's healthy, because there is I love that you make the important doctrinal distinction, because sometimes people don't think about, when you're thinking about paranormal, think of spirituality, angels and demons, we just kind of remove doctrine and why the two have to go together. And you're right, because Christ's manifestation in the Old Testament, Jesus, is not the same as what he is in the New, because it would make no sense why Paul's talking about how he lowered himself, how he had to become, humble in his state. It's a great example. So let's just play this out a little bit. Not a part of her notes. You've got, like, for instance, the two beings that show up with Jesus, the Christophany with Abraham. Was this the same example of it being Ish? Do you remember? Or we could look at
yes, up. And in fact, those are the same entities, okay. Right? So in chapter 18, there's three entities that come to Abraham. Mm-hmm. There's the angel of the Lord, who ends up talking to Abraham in the tent, and then they have that the bartering discussion about how many people will it take so that he won't destroy Sodom and Gomorrah.
Right.
That's all the Lord, but there's two others that are there who come to Abraham. They're called Ish, and then in the next chapter, all of a sudden, boom, like in Acts 8, when Philip's just suddenly in somewhere else, they're in a completely different place. They're in Sodom, where Lot is at. So they've come there, but it's the same creatures. Mm-hmm. Now, it's also important to point out, because you'll read this and you'll hear a lot of people say this, that angels have no physicality. They're pure spirit.
Right.
Well, that's just not true. Read Genesis 18, mm-hmm. because Abraham kills the fatted calf and they have dinner together and he washes their feet. Then the angel Lord goes inside and has a discussion that Sarah overhears in the tent. And then the two angels go into Sodom and Gomorrah, and the men of the town want to sleep with them. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all, the whole thing is physical. There's some sort of a physicality to these beings. And for the life of me, John, I don't understand this. I remember reading about the Bible Answer Man, Hank Hanegraaff, talking about this on his show. And then I went to his little booklet and he's like, yeah, there's no physicality to angels. And he almost called it a heresy to say that. And I'm like, what Bible are you reading, man? Who in the world was Jacob wrestling exactly. with? And what was that? Just in his mind or something like that? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
He wrenched his hip out of socket. Just kidding. It wasn't really a hip. It was some sort of a hip of his, some psychological disorder or something. I don't know what in the world people are thinking, but
yeah, well, the
there's
angel,
physicality to this. Yeah. And that's important.
Well, and the angel that stood in the way, stopping a donkey from continuing, or you got the one who killed 185,000 soldiers. I mean, there's so many, you have to explain so many things that's like, All right, let's keep moving on.
So yeah, they're the same guys, Genesis 18 and Genesis 19.
You know what's interesting? I think you've read his books too. Brian Godawa, in his book on, I think it's Noah Primeval, he does a kind of a good job of playing out in your brain of like, what would this look like for there? Because he does kind of describe them as being a little bit different, but yet there's a physical presence throughout the narrative. If you haven't read the books, they're good. They're entertaining. They're fun. They're graphic. So if your parents listening to this, you might want to.
But Brian's also a Reformed guy.
He is.
He's one of the few others that are in this space.
That's right. We should get him on the pod for sure. I haven't thought about that. But I distinctly remember appreciating how he played out the physical nature of the angels in his story. Fighting alongside the humans. It was just fascinating.
Right.
It was a very fascinating way of thinking about it. He's got a great imagination. Obviously, he's got sound theology. And so it was fun listening to him. And then, you know what's the gold part about those books is the appendix at the end where he goes through and kind of explains this theology of why he put... I mean, that's kind of the gold in it if you've not gone and used that. So, all right, there we go.
Yep.
A little plug for you if you want to read some divine counsel perspectives in a more of a, what do they call it, fantasy.
So those are Brian Godawa's books that you're talking about in there, the Chronicles and the Nephilim. Mm-hmm. So he goes through Noah and Enoch and Gilgamesh and all the way to Jesus in his seventh book.
Yeah, I'm only two books in. I typically listen to them on vacation. So sorry, Brian, you got to wait for my next vacation. All right, great. So these men... It's important, again, for our theology to understand is that they are appearing as men, but they are not.
As men. That's right. So there's some kind of, there's a relationship between us. You know, I gave you a quote from Meredith Klein, and he was talking about somehow that we share the image of God in Genesis 1, and we've talked about that a little bit. And so there's overlaps between us. So much overlaps that apparently the two species can mate together in Genesis 6, but they're not exactly us. So
that's right. You can go listen to
we're the men of the dirt, the dust, the ground. That's what Adam is, and they're not that.
They're not that. And what's interesting too is that when we think about how God ends up using us to advance the glory of the gospel and not the angels, he could totally send angels to advance the gospel around the world, but he uses a lesser creature. And this is kind of what I wanted to point out is that when we think about the capacity of these creatures, it's pretty powerful. So they show up to Sodom and Gomorrah and they blind all of these men that are outside the door, right? You've got the angels that somehow freed Peter and Paul from prison. We'll talk about that next episode, how they think Peter's angel is outside the door and not Peter. Very random. Don't even know what I think about that. It's just random thoughts. Stay tuned for next episode. You have the angels striking down Herod with a disease, right? You have angels moving stones. I mean, the list could keep going on. Anything else you can think about? Just when you start thinking about their physical involvement in our world, it's anywhere from blindness, disease, to physical, to fighting. As examples where God is utilizing
weather. I mean, there's all kinds of weird things in Revelation that they're doing that have to do with the judgment, pouring out the bowls of wrath and, you know, whatever kind of physicality that is.
That's right.
So yeah, they're assigned to certain functions in the cosmos. And, you know, the angels that release in the Euphrates River, the entities at the Euphrates River or whatever, like they're holding the doors closed. And then when the command is given, open it up and let the hordes of hell out or that's whatever, right. You know?
Yeah. I think that, you know, when I'm always fascinated by reading C.S. Lewis and his imagination and how he just kind of pulled things together and pulling back the curtain on some of this stuff. Like if you really just start paying attention in your Bible reading, you really get to see the other realm, not in its, you don't get full explanation. It's not like there's a, you know, a book that gives us all the entities and exactly how they work and how they function. But you see enough of it to go, there is something going on in that realm. And it is extremely fascinating. And I don't think there's anything wrong to be excited about the reality of we're going to live in a new heavens and a new earth. And the two entities come together, and it's going to be an endless discovery of learning all of God's creation and who his nature is and who he is. It's, to me, I'm fascinated by it. And I think some of this is just a little bit of an introduction to what the hope is that's beyond the grave, the power that's beyond the grave.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Okay, so we've talked a little bit about them appearing as men. Doug, there was a, I don't know if you grew up in this stage, but I remember as a kid, my grandparents would talk about guardian angels and how, well, you know, you definitely, because I would ride dirt bikes and I would crash, and I was a pretty daredevil guy growing up. I mean, I rolled my truck 7 times and did, I mean, just, I definitely should have died. There's definitely a time when I was 18 where the tow truck driver shows up and goes, "You're not dead?" He looks at my truck. He's like, how are you not dead? And, you know, you just kind of chuckle. You're like, was it God's hand that just came down and protected me? Was it a guardian angel? And so sometimes in the Reform world, we kind of mock this stuff because it's like, well, we tend to mock what we don't understand. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that everybody probably does that.
Yeah. So a couple of verses, and it's not that I want to create this like theology of guardian angels, but I do have some thoughts on it, and then I'll let you interact on it as well. But there seems to be, we read a lot of passages that had some negative and positive. So you've got blinding, and then at the same time, you have them interacting with releasing Peter from prison. You have them removing a stone for Jesus to come out of, things like this. So you see both a negative and a positive of them interacting. And some of these we don't know. You know, like did Peter actually see the angel that let them go? Was, you know, what was the interaction there? Or did they just, because it says the chains fell off and the door opened up? So Hebrews 1:13 tells us this. There's this introduction. Maybe one day we'll, I don't know how to be a Kingdoms Unveiled podcast, but Doug is slowly convincing me that Hebrews is not Paul. It's written by Luke. Random. We'll leave that out there. Hebrews 1:13, "And to which of the angels has he said, 'Sit at my right hand until I make you your enemies a footstool for your feet'?" Verse 14, "Are they not all ministering spirits sent out to serve for the sake of those who are to inherit salvation?" So, and then right after that he says, "Pay close attention to what you have heard, lest we drift away from it." So he kind of just drops this theology of angels being ministering spirits to those who are saved. What are they ministering? How are they ministering? What does that look like? It doesn't say. And I think there's a way to think about it. So I'm not gonna give that away yet. Jesus in Matthew chapter 18 and verse 10, when dealing with children, he says this: "See that you do not despise one of these little ones, for I tell you that in heaven, their angels always see the face of my Father who is in heaven." So somehow there's a direct connection between the children, a guardian angel in some way, a representation, and his Father. No explanation from Jesus other than, "These people mean something to me, so back off." And even, this is a fascinating story. It says, this is when Peter's in prison, and he is apparently been set free. Not apparently, he's set free. He's at the door. He's knocking on the door. The little girl goes and sees him through the window. And they say to her, "You are out of your mind." But she kept insisting that it was so. And they kept saying, "It is his angel." So there was some kind of theology in the early church about angel representation, to which I don't know, because the Bible doesn't say, right? So before I give my thoughts, Doug, what are your thoughts on this?
Man, I have no clue. Seriously. It's such a strange thing. And I don't know. I haven't looked into it super deeply.
Yeah.
So that's one of the problems. I mean, I know what I've kind of inherited in terms of tradition, and we just don't talk about this kind of stuff. And so, you know, maybe we poo-poo it or whatever.
Yeah.
But I'm not opposed to the idea that everybody has an angel. When you were talking earlier, it reminded me of a story my aunt and uncle tell of them driving between a couple of small towns over on the western slope of Colorado. And a deer came running out in front of their motorcycle. They're both on the motorcycle together, and they're 65 years old when this happened.
Ooh.
And in order to avoid the motorcycle, he had to pull the thing down. And he says, all I can tell you is that I felt hands come on top of my hands and put me back upright and kept the thing from falling over. And I was able to pull over and we were okay. Nothing happened to us. But he describes it as, I mean, that to me very much is along the ideas of a guardian angel sort of a thing. And it's obviously subjective and you could poke holes at whatever you want to, but that's his explanation. They're very godly Christian right. people. And I have no reason to doubt that they were making it up. And their lives were saved. It's very much like what you said earlier, except for that they actually describe an entity that they were able to feel and see. So,
yeah, you know, I think the danger is trying to look for them. I mean, this is, you know, Hebrews 13 when talking about, and again, just it's a random statement, but Hebrews 13:2, do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unaware. I'm even trying to figure out the theology behind it. Like, we should be excited about entertaining angels. I don't know. What's the point? You know, like, you'd be very nice to everybody because you could meet an angel. And you're like, is that my motivation? Or should I just desire to show the love of Christ to people? I'm trying to figure out why you threw that in there, Luke or Paul or whoever you are. So it is. It's interesting to me that at times the Bible, it does seem random, and it's probably my lack of knowledge. You know, like even the statement in Jude where it talks about, and I think I know what he's getting at, but when he's talking about Satan and Michael fighting over the body of Moses, you're like, that is so random. Mm-hmm. Or James just like out of nowhere, resist the devil and he will flee from you. And you're like, well, how do you resist him? In what ways? So I do have some thoughts on this. I think that there are times where there are supernaturally weird things that happen. You hear stories about children who are lost in the woods and some person brings them back. Or there was a story recently I heard about a woman who tried to avoid an animal, drove off a cliff. She died, but she had like a three-year-old in the back seat. It was in the back seat for like 24 hours. And she kept talking about like, where did the person go? Where did the man go? Where did the man go? Talking about this person that was in the car.
There's millions and millions and millions of these kinds of stories.
Right.
This is not a one-off sort of a thing.
No, I don't think so either. And I think that when you have writers of the New Testament writing to the church, they're always writing to the church because they're shepherds and they're sensitive to their role at times. You have them writing to people who are hurting and they're frustrated and they're scared. And I think about Peter when he writes to the suffering church, and we talked about this last week, where he uses the descent of Christ and the victory that was won there as a means to encourage them, which is a supernatural event. And I think at times, like here, the writer of Hebrews is using angels saying, God is absolutely involved in protecting and guiding you as He's bringing you through your mission. So we're proclaiming the gospel. We're caring for one another. We're caring for those who are the strangers who were lost. And at times you will face danger, and don't think that God is unaware and has not provided provision for you. And he provides it in a way where it's not, I think, so I'm speaking in vague here, and I could totally be wrong. And that's fine. But sometimes there's a vagueness to the protection of God. And I think he's providing a means for us to understand, like, no, there are entities that I have commissioned to be involved in your life. And you should see that as a comfort, not as a thing to worship or a thing to look for. I mean, I don't know how to interpret 3:13:2, man. That's weird. But I think it is a means that when these weird things that happen, now listen, it could have also been for God's will for them to crash and they go off the cliff and your family dies off that motorcycle crash, right? And the angel's not involved. That kind of stuff happens too, right? People get cancer. So I look at it saying God wasn't finished using them. They had not reached their day and their purposes in life. And I think that's how we're to read this, in that God, nothing happens out of accident. God is in control. He has put his plan in place. We will suffer. We will eventually die, and that will all be according to his plan and purpose, and we do not need to fear what will happen because he is here. It says, are they not ministering spirits sent out to serve for the sake of those who are being saved? I think we just see that as an encouragement and just let it be what it is. And it's all a part of this realm, the spiritual realm. When we're thinking about, you have some who are bringing judgment. You have some that are using positive as far as freeing people from prison. And then you have some who are ministering. Like, what were the ministering spirits that came to minister to Jesus in the prison? I just want to know what they fed him, because in the desert. Dude, the amount of questions I have when I get to the new heavens, the new earth.
Oh, yeah.
I've got so many. I have to some people, they think it's trivial and dumb. I'm like, I'm fascinated by it. What did they feed him? So here's a random question.
You know,
sorry, go ahead.
Well, your point reminded me of our show that we did on Dr. Heiser and his chapter kind of against Calvinism or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it allows us to bring it up again, that it's not the point that he's making that's the problem. It's how he's answering that we think is the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. And what you're saying there is that God, you know, as good Reformed people, we confess that God's the first cause of all things, but he uses means, and it pleases him to involve his entire creation in both of the realms, invisible and visible, and have them interact together. And to do that in a way that is according to his terms and lawful and just and holy. So there are those perpetrators on the other side that violate his prescriptive will for them. Mm-hmm. And they come over here and they do things like Genesis 6 or whatever. But there are many, many more of them that are loyal to him, that do exactly what he tells them to do. And they're, you know, they're servants of the Lord. I mean, there's a lot of times that angels are actually called servants. Mm-hmm. I'm a servant. And they'll even say that when somebody wants to worship them. Don't do that. I'm a servant with you.
That's right. Of get the off king. The ground. So, Daniel, exactly. Get off the ground. Yeah. That's good.
And it's important to bring out, I think that, because especially when you come into the next show and talking about demons, mm-hmm. and stuff, that you know, just take the Michael and the dragon story, and a third of the angels fell. However you want to see that, as whether it's a third of the watchers or it's a third of all the hosts of heaven or whatever, the point is 2/3 of them did not. And so they double in number those who are evil. And I don't think that we give that enough credence, because we think so often about the evil, mm-hmm. and how evil these creatures are and how many of them that there might be. But it doesn't matter, because the ones who are loyal and remain on the Lord's side far outnumber them. And of course, they're under the King of Kings, who nothing can thwart his plan anyway. So I think that's supposed to be a comfort for us as well.
I agree. I mean, to your point, so we think about the story of Elisha, and you got the chariots of fire, this army that surrounds the entire city, which who knows how many of that would have been, how many thousands of that would have been. And then Jesus, I think, references the same entities, or the kinds of entities, where he's like, can I not call down a host of armies if I wanted to? But I don't, right? So to your point, in that as evil and as weird as things get, we need to be comforted and reminded that God's army is not going to lose. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to advertise this now. If you've not read Doug's new book, which we have not advertised it yet, but The Rings of Revelation, we're going to be doing a podcast on it soon, but you can get it at Amazon, right? It's on Amazon, both paperback and digital. We're going to be doing a pod on it soon, but if you want to get ahead of time, go ahead and do that. But I think that's why the book was written, to help us remember that in the end, as crazy as this war in life is, we still win. We still win. I was going to ask you a question, and for the life of me, Doug, I can't remember what it is.
I took it out of your head.
You did. You totally took it out of my head. But it's probably good, because we're at 40 minutes, so it's good to shut this down. Doug, you made a reference to something. And maybe if I remember the question, I'll ask you it next week. You made a reference to something that we need to talk about, because it's a very interesting debate. Are demons fallen angels? Are they the ones that were swept out of heaven? So next week, we're going to talk about demons. And this conversation is going to be a little bit more interactive. There's a little bit more that we can talk about, and how it influences us. I think there's a lot more engagement in this realm than the other realm, as far as what Paul commissions us to. So next week, if you come back, we're going to be talking about the demonic realm, or demons, and what are they, and how should we view them, and how should we not interact with them. So any parting shots before we go?
No, that's going to be a fun one.
And then another episode, I'll just do this now. I'll tell you what the next two episodes are about. Can a Christian be demon possessed? And this whole thing about oppression and possession. Have we got it wrong? That's in 2 weeks. So gear it up. Well, all right. Thank you guys for listening. If you interact with more of the material that we have put together, you can go to Doug's website, douglasvandorn.com, or you can go to theocast.org, and all of the material that you've seen for the Kingdoms Unveiled can be found there. All right. We'll talk to you guys soon.